From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with him? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
It's Ali Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner by Annette Bird closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
What a way to start your Saturday morning with those race clips looking back on some of the top horses we've seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Good morning. Welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by our friends at Red Brand Fence. This, of course, the show that launched this great network. And I am Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios and ready to roll for the next couple of hours. A bit of a quieter weekend, at least on the, well, we'll call it the Derby prep front. There was one Derby prep race, points race, for the two-year-olds left here in 2019. That's the Springboard Mile that takes place tomorrow at Remington. And in case you're wondering, yeah, edging ever closer to the first Saturday in May, 140 days, 9 hours, 48 minutes. Well, check that. 47 minutes and 56 seconds. How about that? Closer than I thought to the first Saturday in May and the Run for the Roses. We'll be there all week long, and we'll be there to bring you that coverage of the Run for the Roses here on the network in partnership with our friends at NBC Sports and Westwood One. We'll do that again next year for you, and it's a huge year coming up here on the network. You can go to our website soon. You'll see our entire 2020 broadcast schedule. We'll have that posted for you. But rest assured, we'll be there for all three Triple Crown races, the Breeders' Cup, so many of the big races in between, and so many of the big races leading up to the Triple Crown. In terms of what's been happening this week, it's been a week where we get to focus on some of the topics that are pertinent in the sport, in the industry. And what I mean by that is that we just saw the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program, their Global Symposium on Racing, wrap up this past week. I'm going to talk to Byron King from the Blood Horse in just a little bit. Byron was there covering that event for them. There were several topics that were discussed. And one of the ones that we're going to talk about all of them, but one of the ones I want to make sure that I touch on with Byron for sure in that interview is, it was titled A Personal Perspective of Racing's Past, Present, and Future. Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, future Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher were on the panel. Amy Zimmerman moderated that panel. And there were some interesting things that came out of that, some interesting perspectives from both Bob and Todd, in particular, their stance on Lasix. And should Lasix be outlawed or banned in all jurisdictions? Should we not use Lasix at all? And I'll talk to Byron about what Bob and Todd had to say about that topic and so many others. The other panel that was interesting was the panel that was comprised of horse players. It was called Listening to the Horse Racing Customer. And so often in the sport, I think we forget about that customer of ours, the horse player. Without the $2 bettor, we don't have a sport. This is a betting game, and we don't have a sport without the bettor. It's that simple. It's a unique element of thoroughbred racing in our industry. And there was a panel comprised of several horse players. And I'll talk to Byron about what they had to say about some of the things that racing can do to make the game better for those of us that bet on it. There was a track surfaces panel, an equine safety reform panel, which is obviously a hot button topic in our sport today, and rightfully so. So we'll talk to Byron about those topics and more coming up in our first interview segment right around 8:15 Eastern. Gulfstream Park has a huge day today, somewhat of a Pegasus World Cup preview day, if you will. Five stakes races, four of them are graded. You've got the Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale on the turf. You've got the Grade 3 Harlan's Holiday on the main track. The favorite in there is going to be seven-year-old War Story. He's still here. He's still running. Seven-year-old War Story, 7-2 on the morning line in the Harlan's Holiday. You also have Bodie Express. Bodie Express, the horse that was runner-up as a maiden in the Florida Derby last year, and also the horse that, as a maiden, unseated Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez at the start of the Preakness Stakes earlier this season. Ron Nicoletti is going to be here with me to handicap all the big races from Gulfstream coming up in the second half of the show. It was also announced this week that Charles C. Canty and Billy Reed have been named to the National Museum of Racing's Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor, essentially being inducted into the Hall of Fame on the media side of things. And hard to think of two more deserving individuals than Charles C. and Billy. Remember, Charles C. began her career, well, she did a lot of other things before she got into the TV broadcasting side, and she became a network broadcaster with CBS, her first broadcast coming with the Traverse Stakes in 1977, and then got a chance to work on the Triple Crown broadcasts and the Breeders' Cup broadcasts. Simply sensational. She was the one who pioneered doing interviews on horseback. Billy Reed, Billy's a native of Kentucky, and he's probably most remembered for his three Eclipse Awards and working with the Louisville Courier-Journal here in Louisville, Kentucky. He also worked at the Herald Leader before that. People might forget that. Billy, an accomplished turf rider, highly accomplished, and now will get his due being inducted into the Media Roll of Honor and named in honor of one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Joe Hirsch. Going to visit with Charles C. Canty coming up right around 9 o'clock Eastern this morning. Going to talk to her about that honor. I called her yesterday at her home in North Carolina and had a chance to talk to her. And I can tell you she is beside herself that she was the one to get the phone call for this. And I can't wait to visit with her. She is such a wonderful person and should be a great interview coming up 9 o'clock Eastern time. Going to visit with Mike D'Anzaris, my good friend from Embrace the Race. Many of you thinking about what to get that horse racing fan on your list right now. Well, I can tell you, EmbraceTheRace.com is the place to go, and Mike will tell you more about it and some of the things they're offering for Christmas coming up later in the first half of the show. And then our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, also on deck. We'll do that in the second half of the program today. So it's Byron King, 8:15. Mike D'Anzaris from Embrace the Race at 8:35. Charles C. Canty with me, 9 o'clock Eastern. Ron Nicoletti handicapping the races at Gulfstream at 9:20. And our Industry Star of the Week interview toward the end of the show at 9:40. That segment presented by our friend Stuart Morris. Our poll question this morning, here's what I want to know. I thought about asking you about industry issues, and I thought about asking about the Springboard Mile and who you thought was going to win that race, but I said, let's do something a little bit different here this morning. So if you go to our Twitter feed, at HRRN on Twitter, I want to know, quite simply, where are you listening to the Equine Forum this morning? Where are you tuned in? Your city, your state, however you want to answer that question, but where are you listening to the Equine Forum on this Saturday morning? Let me know. I'll pass along those results as we move throughout the program here today. Going to get to a quick break. I'll come back and visit with Byron King talking about the racing symposium and some of those topics that were covered over the couple of days out there in Arizona. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, all presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Introducing new to Spendthrift's Share the Upside program for 2020. Colfront.
Colfront does it again, wiring the field in the Amsterdam.
The world-class miler retires with more than $1.8 million in earnings and owns a rare 5 graded stakes wins at 5 different distances and racetracks.
Colfront wins it for the U.S.
Now available for inspection and offered for a limited time on the Share the Upside program. Colfront. Mine your mare's potential at Spendthrift Farm, the breeder's farm.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
They're coming to the top of the stretch, and it is McKenzie off the turn in front. Vino Rosso comes up to him as they arrive at the eighth pole. McKenzie digs down. Vino Rosso alongside. These two at the 16th pole. Vino Rosso has taken the lead, and it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic. McKenzie was second, higher power was third, and Elite was fourth. It was Vino Rosso and Errata Keys.
No announcer rolls their R's the way Larry Colmus does. He had the call of the Breeders' Cup Classic, Vino Rosso defeating McKenzie. Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, the trainers of those two horses respectively. And this past week, Bob and Todd sat down for a panel that was moderated by Amy Zimmerman at the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Global Symposium on Racing. And Byron King from the Blood Horse was there to cover it. He brought you all the information and all the news, did it very, very well. And he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Byron, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for the kind words. It's very kind of you to say that.
Yeah, of course. No, that, you know, for those of us who weren't there, being able to keep up with it through your articles on Blood Horse was very helpful. And there were, look, there were no shortage of things discussed and to talk about at that symposium, and you had your hands full going through and covering all of those. But let's start with the one that I just mentioned. It was called A Personal Perspective of Racing's Past, Present, and Future. Bob Baffert, Todd Pletcher, sharing their thoughts on a variety of topics. What were some of the things that stood out to you, Byron?
Well, they began with kind of recalling their careers, and both of them were went to the university out there. But the meat of the whole session there was when they got into topics of medication. And both of them support the elimination of Lasix. Not so much because I think in Baffert's case, he expressed a bit of a fatigue over it. He's kind of tired of hearing about it. And in Fletcher's case, he mentioned that he thinks it would be worthwhile from a public perception standpoint. So I think, like a lot of trainers, they see a positive to Lasix in terms of controlling bleeding, but they also understand the many, many issues that are facing the industry right now, and that was one of the main takeaways from their panel.
That's interesting that you use the word fatigue when you talk about Bob Baffert and his stance on Lasix. I think many of us in the industry probably feel the same way. And I can get Todd's take too, I guess, from a public perception standpoint, although I would argue that I'm not sure that the average fan really understands what goes on in terms of the medication that's used, and there isn't much of it used in our sport today, but there are a couple of things. What else did they have to say? What other topics did they address?
Well, I think one of the issues that both of them feel is that many trainers are being blamed for what's happened in California, or for that matter, any breakdown that happens. And one of their key takeaways is there's a whole team of people that are involved in a horse from its days when it's the mare and the stallion are bred until, you know, when it makes it to the racetrack. And they talked about transparency and everybody kind of essentially doing the right thing. They're the end users, as they acknowledged. But at the same time, we all have a responsibility to do the right thing, as opposed to, you know, looking in a short-term view and maybe looking for profits more so than, say, the welfare of the horse. So one of the things Baffert mentioned, which was kind of interesting, is, you know, he said that now there's so much breeding to sell as opposed to breeding to race. There was a higher percentage years ago. And so now he compared it to, you know, they're baking their pie, but they don't want to eat their pie, meaning the breeders, because they'll pass it along. So I think both of them feel a sense that trainers are being blamed for many of the issues that are going on currently.
Yeah, one of the quotes that was in the article you wrote, that people can go back to bloodhorse.com and read all of your articles from the symposium, but one of them was Bob saying that the situation in California, it was like a wildfire that got out of control and we didn't know how to put it out. All we did was point fingers at everybody. He went on to say, now I think we've got it a little bit better contained. And I guess that's probably the way most people would look at it at this point.
I would agree. I think, you know, they made a lot of dramatic changes out in California, particularly in March. And, of course, even till today, we don't know precisely the reason for the rash of breakdowns. I mean, we know there's a combination involved, but it's very hard to just point a finger at, oh, it was the racetrack, or it was medication, or it was this, it was that. So many of the changes they made were widespread. And I think that kind of reflects in Baffert's statement that they were, you know, trying literally everything, and perhaps on some of these issues, it may not be related, but it's very hard at this point to say specifically what are the key elements that did contribute to the rash of breakdowns.
There was also a panel that was comprised of horse players that was called Listening to the Horse Racing Customer, and I know that quite often at the symposium they will have horse players come up and address the audience and talk about different things that they feel can be done to support the people that support the game, and that's the bettors. What did you take out of that panel, Byron?
Well, that panel, in my opinion, was a little more, it wasn't quite as fresh as some of the other ones because it was a lot of the same topics that have been discussed previously. For example, things like lowering the takeout and things of that nature. But having said that, you know, the reason we're still discussing it is because it really hasn't happened very much, you know. So these guys that spoke on there, and it was a very well-informed, smart panel, you know, they spoke about, you know, really listening to the customer in terms of, okay, let's make this game more appealing. Pat Cummings from the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation was there. He said that horse racing, in terms of a wagering product, is like stale bread compared to fresh bread of sports wagering. And, you know, when you look at the difference in takeout, one bet is superior to the other in terms of there's a smaller rake on a sports wager, or at least a traditional one. And, you know, they talked about we have to make ourselves more appealing in the marketplace, and that includes things such as transparency, having stewards explain decisions, having, you know, put people on like track superintendents to describe how a track is maintained. So for those people that are, you know, looking at track bias, those kinds of things. And, of course, they mentioned takeout and the desire to have it lower. And then someone from the audience, naturally a lot of the audience members at the symposium are racetrack executives, brought up the fact that, you know, at Canterbury a few years ago, they took a pretty dramatic step in reducing takeout, and they did not see the benefits. In fact, they took it on the chin pretty good. So I think there's a very much a reluctance in the industry to have across-the-board takeout reductions. They might, you know, put a low takeout on a pick four or a pick five, something like that, but I don't think there's a whole lot of support, at least as I'm taking the temperature, of a wide across-the-board reductions.
I'm talking with Byron King from Bloodhorse. He was at the Symposium on Racing in Arizona this past week and did a great job covering it and getting those articles out there at bloodhorse.com. Do you get the sense, Byron, that when you listen to the various panels, and in particular this panel here talking about the reduction in takeout and what some of the players would like to see done, do you get that the industry will listen and that real change can come about from these conversations?
Well, I hate to sound cynical because you know, I would love to see it happen, but I think in some of these instances, we do a great job of talking about it and not necessarily implementing it. At least that's been my view looking at it over the years. I think, you know, ultimately what it comes down to in a lot of these issues is people have to see. The horse players want a better bottom line, obviously, right? And so do the racetracks. So I think the racetracks want to see returns that they can feel comfortable about. So I would say on this particular issue, we're going to need to see some horse players really need to embrace these lower takeout wagers, I think, if change is really going to happen and for the next step, you know, to move forward. There's no doubt in my mind that when you see certain low takeout wagers and when you have carryovers, like in a pick five or something, people really step up and, you know, really support those wagers. And I think, you know, that will be the key. It needs to be beneficial, I think, to both sides for change to happen on this particular point.
You mentioned Pat Cummings with the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation being part of that panel. I don't know if this came up at all in the discussion, Byron, but I'll bring it up now. The Thoroughbred Idea Foundation had sent out a press release, I guess it was last week, and I thought this might have some merit. Jim Nantz, the longtime CBS broadcaster, had offered some ideas to the NFL about official reviews and the challenges that we see so often now that have become part of the game. And he said that he thinks there ought to be cameras in the room when the officials are going to the replay booth, going back to New York as it is, and so that the fans, the viewers, can watch the officials make the decision on whatever call, as opposed to just coming back and saying the call stands or the call has been overturned and not giving an explanation. And the parallel they were trying to draw with the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation was that so often in this sport we have stewards who make decisions, a la in the Kentucky Derby this year, and the decisions are never really explained. And I think that that is a point that is a big sticking point to a lot of players, especially if you have money on the horse that's disqualified or even vice versa. You know, why? What was the thought process here? And to have transparency in the sport, which is something we're always bragging about and saying that we need to do, then, you know, I think that may have some merit. Did that come up at all in that conversation?
We did talk about transparency with steward decisions. Whether or not it would, I don't recall it being in that much detail.
Yeah.
That sounds really interesting to me. I think it's, and we've seen, I think in some other jurisdictions in other countries, we've seen, you know, cameras a little bit in the room with some of these stewards. And I think it's a good thing. Anytime you show people the process involved, assuming the people are doing a good job, it will restore a degree of faith, I think, in the whole system. I think that's what horse players want. That's what anybody wants with an official, that, you know, they want some accountability there, and they want to see it done thoroughly and efficiently and all those kinds of things. I would certainly support that, and I think that would be a very, very good thing. I think, you know, there's a reluctance. I've seen this over the years with some stewards that, you know, that they want to make their decision, but they don't necessarily want to defend their decision. And I think clearly there needs to be, because horse players are disillusioned with many of the decisions that go down or the lack of consistency between racetrack and racetrack.
Yeah, many of the racing officials that I know and the stewards that I'm friends with wouldn't want to hear that. But I think that, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea at all, you know, especially if we are going to say that we want more transparency in the sport and we want to cater to the horse player and to the fans. This is one way to do it. And I know that I don't think Jim's idea was met with open arms with the NFL either, but it's something to talk about, and it's an idea, and it's kind of thinking out of the box, and I don't think it's a bad thing. Byron King with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Byron, what other topics or comments stood out to you over the course of the racing symposium?
Well, one of the key and interesting pieces was the Mattress Mac, or Jim Mac of Vail, who is, as everyone, most everyone in racing knows, owned Run Happy and has promoted that stallion. He spoke. He was a popular speaker. He talked on a wide range of topics from his days in the furniture business. He spoke about marketing during one of the panels. And he, of course, for those of your listeners that have followed baseball through the years, he made some sizable bets on the Houston Astros and had some promotions involved with his furniture store. And so he spoke about marketing, and I think a lot of people were very, very much interested in what he had to say. I think people tend to really either like Jim McAvoy quite a bit or view him as a little over the top. And so he was a fascinating panelist, as were a number of the others. You know, they had some track surface discussion. Michael Dickinson, who is the proprietor of Tapeta Footings, and you know, we talked about synthetic tracks and whatnot, and that was interesting, along with a discussion about dirt surfaces. So they covered a wide range of topics, and unfortunately I couldn't attend them all. That's the way it was. I mean, there must have been, I'd say, 14 or 15 of them all.
Yeah, it was I've been there before for multiple symposiums, and they do a tremendous job. Did you get a chance to play any golf when you were out there?
I did not. I did some hiking, however. It's such a lovely outdoors. Arizona is a really spectacular place if you love the outdoors, and I did get to enjoy that.
Yeah, I think I set a new record for lost balls on that course that they have out there by where they do the symposium.
It's a good one, and certainly I would have been playing more in the I'm sure my shots would have landed in the desert more so than the grass.
Byron King, he's a busy man. He's got a lot to get to later today. I know you've got a basketball game for your son? Is that right?
Actually, I'm a referee.
Oh, referee. That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah. So I know a little bit about those stewards, how they feel at times of, you know, if you're a basketball referee, you learn real quick that nobody's typically happy. That was a heck of a good call.
How old are the kids that you're going to be officiating today?
I think today they're middle schoolers, but I've had everybody from high school to middle school. And so it's a fun little side thing, and, you know, get to enjoy a little bit of basketball and have a little fun.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Now, there's no instant replay. You don't have to go to the monitor with the final 2 minutes or whatever it is, right?
No, I do not do that. you know, I don't have all those perks of the high-end guys, but I've got a long way to go before I could get there, that's for sure.
Well, Byron King is a busy man. I'll let him go. Byron, like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and we'll encourage people to go to embracetherace.com to wear what they love today. We'll get that out to you, and happy holidays, my friend. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks. Keep up the great work. Love listening to your show. You guys do a fantastic job.
All right. Thanks, Byron. Byron King here on HRRN. Again, head over to bloodhorse.com if you want to read all of his articles from the symposium. Really did a good job making you feel like you were there as you were reading them, and you could kind of get a sense of what was being discussed over the course of those couple of days. Speaking of Embrace the Race, Mike Dianzeris, the man who created Embrace the Race and is now the owner of the company, is going to be with me in the next segment. Looking forward to that visit. Charles E. Canty coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Ron Nicoletti, 9:20 Eastern, to talk about all the big races down at Gulfstream today. And then our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, at the end of the program. Ask people to let us know at HRN on Twitter where you're listening to the Equine Forum this morning. And the response is starting to come in now. We've got Goshen, Kentucky, the man who co-hosts our BristNet.com call-in show, the Duke of Degeneracy himself, Ed DeRosa, tuning in from Goshen, Kentucky. New York City, Lexington, Kentucky, and just received an email from a listener who is tuned in De Ruyter, New York. So they're coming from everywhere, and I want to hear from you. Where are you listening to the Equine Forum this morning? Go to at HRRN on Twitter to let me know. If you're not on Twitter, then all you have to do is send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I'll pass along those responses as we move throughout the show here this morning. It is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. You go see the great folks at the Lexus Store of Lexington, and they will take care of you if you're in the horse business. I promise you that. The Godfather, Tony Ottiano, he does an incredible job. He's been in the business. He's still involved in this great sport, as is the Lexus Store of Lexington. Go see them. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This man, during his lifetime of nearly 90 years, was synonymous with the thoroughbred racing as best as anybody could portray it. He was born in Fredericksburg, Texas, July 30th, 1880. That was the year the Great Hindu was a two-year-old, and a horse named Fonso won the Kentucky Derby over four rivals to earn $3,800. Our subject ran away from home at the age of 13 to become a jockey. He started as an exercise boy but wore silks in a race at the age of 14. That was long before he became a licensed jockey, although he had ridden at the age of 10 at Wild County Fairs in Texas. He never felt he was a good rider, but he had 1,117 recorded mounts and scored with 123 winners, a few of those against the likes of Immortals, Todd Sloan, and Snapper Garrison. He got too heavy to ride by the time he was 19, and therefore he opted for training to get his license at the age of 20 in 1900. He saddled his first winner in 1902, a horse named Guatama, at New Orleans on March 21st. Between 1902 and 1969, he saddled 1,993 winners, including the winners of more than 100 major stakes. His last winner was a four-year-old filly named Heartland, who won Aqueduct's feature by about 8 hours before he died on April 3rd, 1969. His first stakes winner was Beauclair, who took the Washington Cup at Benning's Racecourse near Washington, D.C. in 1907. He went on to train three Kentucky Derby winners and one Triple Crown winner. The latter was the great Clubfoot Comet Assault in 1946 in the brown and cream silks of the King Ranch. He saddled Bull Venture to win the 1936 Derby at 20-1, and another winner for the King Ranch Middle Ground in 1950. He had a rather unorthodox method of training horses, to say the least. Most trainers would not dare use an apprentice rider in a classic race. This man did it twice, in the Derby, and he won both of them. In 1936, when Ira Hanford on Bold Venture daringly fought through very tight quarters to score by a head over Brevity, and in 1950, when then 16-year-old Bill Bullen kept his mount on the rail to save ground the whole trip. He often said the best horse he had ever trained was Grey Lag, and he went on to say that Grey Lag may have been the singular best he had ever seen. He had bought him as a two-year-old from the Wizard of the Turf, John E. Madden, and raced him until three when Harry Sinclair bought him for $60,000, an unheard-of price at the time. Grey Lag raced for Sinclair and then ran Coca Stable from then on. He was reluctant to use superlatives, but he did feel his best horses besides Grey Lag were Saracen and Assault. His greatest loss was not Grey Lag, it was Stymie, who earned nearly $1 million after being claimed for $1,500. He liked to bet on horses and at one time said, quote, "People who like horses like to bet on them. People who don't bet on them don't belong at the racetrack," end of quote. He was elected to the Racing Hall of Fame in 1959 and was honored by the Thoroughbred Club of America in 1961. Even after a heart attack in 1961, he went on to be leading money-winning trainer in New York. At the age of 87 in 1968, he won 49 races, and that year he trained Gallen Bloom, who was juvenile title holder of that year. He was stoop-shouldered, walked with a bit of a shuffle, with his hand always thrust forward as if something of extraordinary interest was to occur just in front of him. This truly great trainer went shuffling off, so to speak, to the great paddock in the sky, April 3rd, 1969, as an octogenarian at the age of 88. He was the man from Texas, Max Hirsch.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Mike Pena, Baron in the Backstretch, back with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Want to welcome everyone back throughout North America and around the world tuned into the Equine Forum this morning. Ask people to weigh in and, well, just let me know. Where are you listening from on this Saturday morning? And so many people responding on our Twitter feed, at HRN. Other people emailing me. You can do that, Mike, at horseracingradio.net. So I want to welcome Craig in Hudson, Wisconsin, Steve in Merrick, Long Island, Tom, Pinehurst, North Carolina, Mike, who is tuned in Lewiston, New York, Nick in Edgewood, Florida, Stephen in Covington, Louisiana, and King in Atlanta, Georgia, and just got a new one in, Paul, tuning in the car in Forest Park, Illinois. And appreciate everybody being with us here this morning all over the country. And don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show, all of our programs, at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts as well. Another great way to keep up with the program. Speaking of podcasts, this past Wednesday, I had the chance to visit with Mertkan Kantarmaji, who is a trainer that is really making his mark with the claiming side of things in New York. He was part of our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. You can tune into that show every single Wednesday night here on the network from 6 to 7 Eastern. But if you missed it, Mertkan, a native of Turkey who came here with his family to make a name for himself, and he's doing it, and his story is fantastic. He has a very unique talent outside of horse racing, but I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag. You have to go back and listen to the podcast if you want to hear more about Mertkan, but it's all there for you on our website at horseracingradio.net. Somebody else who is listening this morning is, well, at least I think he is, because he's joining me on the program right now, is my good friend Mike Dianzaris, the man who came up with the concept for a company you may have heard of. It's called Embrace the Race, and he's with me now. I guess, Mike, live from Lake Placid, New York, is that right?
Yeah, right on. I'm looking at the high peaks. I'm about a block and a half from the world-famous 1980 rink. And, taking a quick break from the holiday shipping season to do a little hockey coaching for my son. So Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you and Michelle and everybody out there, Mike.
Yeah, same to you, my friend. I know that this is a very busy time for you, not only with the business side of things, but you do have the children that are getting into different sports, and you mentioned your son Mikey, who is up there in Lake Placid now getting ready for the hockey. How do you keep it all together, my friend? How do you keep the business going and keep the family life going?
It's four simple letters, J-I-L-L, my wife Jill, simple, right? She keeps it all together, and both work and family, and then obviously we've got a great staff in our warehouse and on our main store on Broadway in Saratoga that really one of the great things about this time of the year is so much customer interaction, and fortunately for us, what comes with that is all the great feedback. So we get email after phone call of people just saying how much they love the product and how great the staff is. So yeah, it's much like racing. It takes a family. So our literal family and our Embrace the Race family helps get it all done. So
yeah, well, people that listen to the program on a regular basis know that all of the guests who appear on the show receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, and it's one of those things where when I say that, I can say it with pride, because I know that when they receive their gift card from you and they go to the EmbraceTheRace.com website, or they stop into the store on Main Street in Saratoga, they're going to know that they're getting a quality item. And I know that when I say it. So I'm very proud to be able to have you associated with Horse Racing Radio Network and to have your brand associated with what we do. It's a pleasure to be part of it, my friend.
Well, thanks for saying that, Mike. Yeah, you know, when we created the brand years ago, you know, the simple idea, it was a very sort of linear thing. It said, here's racing that's got an amazing, wonderful history, an amazing emotional fabric to it, which is that spirit of always striving, never settling, next man up, go forward. All of those great analogies you hear at the track and at the barn and on racing broadcasts on your show every week, and we just set out to create a brand that would embody that, represent that, and to your point, you know, we took a major leap to say, hey, we'll not only, you know, represent the sport, we'll be the sports brand, and the way people respond to it is great, and we put a ton of time and effort into making sure that the quality and the experience and the style and, of course, the logo, which is absolutely one of a kind, just is so recognizable. People, you know, call us all the time now and say, hey, I was in an airport in Chicago and I saw Embrace the Race, and it doesn't get any cooler than that.
Yeah, no, I see it everywhere, especially at racetracks. We, as you know, we travel the racetracks all over the country and all over the world in some respects, and it's rare now to go to a racetrack and not see somebody that has that Embrace the Race logo on, whether it's a shirt or a cap or a tie, whatever it might be. What, Mike, what types of things are you seeing with the brand and the customers? I guess emotions would be a good word for that.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Mike. I think what we're seeing is the two things. and we're in a really unique situation, right? Because we're at the intersection, and you and I have talked about this a lot. We're at the intersection of your industry folks, your regular enthusiasts, your for lack of a better term, more impassioned day-to-day enthusiasts. And then we also have the other audience that we serve, which is that audience that is less connected, still connected, but not connected on a daily, weekly, or even monthly basis. They just have a wonderful image or connection to the fluidity and spirit of racing. So what we're seeing on across the board is that there's a tremendous belief in the fabric of what racing stands for. There's a tremendous belief in the beautiful connection between horse and human, and there's a tremendous belief in the celebratory style and events and alluring aspiration around racing. We really don't hear a lot of what's obviously the elephant in the room, some of the negativity that's gone on. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, there's almost an acknowledgement that hey, you know, sometimes things happen, things need to change, but man, we love this anyway, and it's really cool, and we're going to show the world we love it with Embrace the Race. And that's very rewarding for us, because we feel like from an industry perspective, every time someone walks out of our store or picks up a UPS package at their front door from Embrace the Race and they put it on and they wear it not only to the track, but they wear it to work, they wear it to their hockey game, they wear it to dinner, they wear it to the boardroom. You know what? That's helping racing, and that's helping everybody.
I don't have an official countdown to Christmas in terms of minutes and seconds and all that kind of stuff, but I can tell you that we are 11 days away from December 25th. What types of gifts, when people go to EmbraceTheRace.com, are still available to be shipped and to be there in time for Christmas, Mike?
Yeah, Mike, really, right now through probably even Monday or even Tuesday of next week, we're pretty good on shipping just about everything. You know, we've got some amazing new sweaters that just came in, some new polos looking ahead to springtime. And, of course, in a lot of the racing world, it's warm weather anyway, right? So that warm weather gear is still very relevant 365 days a year. So a lot of great sweaters, some cool winter gear, obviously winter hats, some nice sweatshirts. The jewelry collection is outstanding for not only her, but cufflinks and money clips for him. And then there's a lot of sizeless items, you know, like drinkware and ball caps and ties and keychains. So obviously the list goes on and on. And we like to say we're going to beat Santa to the wire. We're going to stick our neck out coming down the stretch, and we're going to get them. We like them, but we'll get them, and we'll get it. We're going to get to the wire first. So you can check it all out at EmbraceTheRace.com.
How about looking ahead to next year? What are some things that folks can look forward to? Are there some new additions or some different things maybe on the stallion breeder side of things? I know you like to get involved with that area too.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of folks connecting with us already, reaching out, inquiring. You know, obviously stallion season shows, you know, get going right after the turn of the year. And you know what, one customer came in and said, hey, you know, we've always given items, you know, really emblazoned with our farm name and our stallion name all over it, and then we wonder where they go because we never really see them again. And we know yet people love our stallion because our season sold out. So we started talking and we're creating a whole collection, Embrace the Race collection around, you know, a couple of stallions, a couple of mares. Certainly we've always done racing partnerships and that whole idea is, you know, putting your silks, your farm name, your stallion on Embrace the Race. And, you know, there's always a time and a place for barn gear, but obviously Embrace the Race is not that. And we help insert your name and your stallion and your farm in conversations away from the track in lifestyle environments more, you know, in a way that barn gear never will. So we'd love to talk to, you know, your audience. You reach out, EmbraceTheRace.com, and talk about how we can help, you know, promote yourself, promote your stallions and breeding operations, racing operations, and you know, obviously, and promote racing as well.
I'm visiting with Mike D'Anzaris from Embrace the Race here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, you can go to EmbraceTheRace.com to find the perfect gift for the horse racing fan on your list this holiday season. Mike, just if you'll bear with me for just 1 second, our poll question today, I was asking folks to weigh in, either send me an email or go to @HRN on Twitter to let us know what part of the country, what part of the world they might be listening to the Equine Forum this morning. And the responses have been coming in quickly. And want to welcome Mark, who is tuned in Cincinnati, Ohio, Hank in Austin, Texas, and Larry, who is tuned in listening to the Equine Forum from Ocean Isle Beach in North Carolina. Happy to have you along for the show this morning. Mike, I have to ask you about your son, Mikey. You mentioned you're up in Lake Placid. You're getting ready for the hockey. I can remember a couple of years ago when you had your rink in your backyard, Mikey would come out dressed in his, I guess it was his Boston Bruins uniform, and he would stand there with his stick at center ice, and he would not start skating until you played the national anthem, and he would stand there and kind of wobble back and forth like the players do in the NHL when they play the national anthem. Does he still do that? Do you have to get the national anthem out of the way before he can skate?
He has a great memory. No, he will go without it. He does certainly make me finish the last stanza or two before he'll hit the ice running. But he's nine now and playing and having an absolute ball. Thanks, like I said, to that four-letter word, Jill, I'm able to coach and work as well. And between he and his sister, Sophia, who's 13, and on a girls team right here in Saratoga Springs and doing great, competing on the New York State and New England level, doing wonderful herself. She's got a doubleheader tomorrow. So we're a busy family between horses and hockey, and it's a great combination. We obviously know there's a ton of connection. Mike, we've talked about this between, pucks and ponies, horses and hockey and all of that, but we see a ton of folks around both sports that have that common connection. So Jill and I really enjoy getting to see them compete. Hockey's a wonderful sport, much like racing. You can't do it all on your own. It's always next man up, next person up, and we think it's a great way to sort of teach the kids not only how to skate and have fun, but compete and be a part of something bigger than themselves. So we do everything we can to support them on that, and it gets a little hectic come Christmas time, but it's worth every second, because if we blink, it's another 5 years, and he won't even be able to stand on our back rink anymore. So there you go.
Yeah, so true. Well, Mike, good luck with the hockey. Enjoy the holiday season with the kids. Merry Christmas to you and Jill, and give those kids a hug for Michelle and I.
You guys too. Merry Christmas to everybody at HRN and in the racing world, and embrace the race, and certainly have a wonderful, safe holiday season, everyone.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Mike D'Anzaris here on HRRN. Again, embracetherace.com is the place to go. And great people. They work really hard, and they do a phenomenal job. And you will feel good about the gift you give to that fan on your list, because the products, everything across the board, first-class quality products, no doubt about it. Welcome to Connie in Saratoga Springs, New York, letting us know that Connie is tuned in here this morning. And again, you can let us know where you're listening, and I'll try to pass that along throughout the program at HRRN on Twitter, or shoot an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and just let me know where you are tuned in, anywhere across the country, anywhere around the world here this morning. Hour two coming up next. I'll get you set for that when I come back. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway stallion Caraconti, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and has already sired three first crop stakes winners and two additional stakes place two-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in three starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right.
There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Antoinette, now in front, then I dare you, quality heat, and on the outside stretch the story. Antoinette wins the off-the-turf Teppan.
Antoinette, the two-year-old daughter of Darley Stallion Hard Spun, scored in that $100,000 Teppan Stakes at Aqueduct last week to become Hard Spun's second two-year-old stakes winner of 2019, along with Grade 2 Saratoga Special winner Green Light Go. He has been a pretty good year for Hard Spun, and that makes Antoinette your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Hard Spun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more first crop stakes winners than any other stallion before him. Only Curlin can top Hard Spun's four graded stakes winning three-year-olds in 2019, and he's currently number 5 on the general sire list. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Field of 13 that are all in line. We're ready for the start. Improbable Restless in the starting gate. Mike Smith and Improbable settling down. They're off in the Preakness, and the Maiden Pony Express lost the jockey at the start. Unseated John Velasquez right out of the gate.
Well, I'm going to do a show looking back on some of the top moments of 2019 as we edge toward the end of the year here in 2019. But I just thought that was interesting because I don't know if you define that as a top moment of 2019. Probably not. But John Velasquez coming off of the Maiden Bodie Express at the start of the Preakness Stakes. That was Larry Colmus who had the call as part of our coverage and as part of the NBC television broadcast. Bodie Express, that was a... You know, it was a moment only because people actually were looking at Bodie Express as being a major player in the Preakness, even though he was still a maiden. He had run some bang-up races, including in the Kentucky Derby. And then Johnny was not happy about that. I can remember on the coverage catching up with him afterwards, and he was ticked, to say the least, and I can't blame him. Not happy with the maiden. Bodie Express, and the reason I wanted to play that, because Bodie Express is back in action later today at Gulfstream Park in the Harlan's Holiday, part of a 8-horse field that includes War Story, who is the 7-2 morning line, actually second choice on the morning line, behind Prince Lucky, who is 2-1, who will be ridden by John Velasquez for Todd Pletcher. This time, Bodie Express going to be ridden by MSCL Jaramillo. Interesting stuff. That's a big program down there at Gulfstream today. It's a Pegasus World Cup preview, if you want to look at it that way. Because of the fact that Prince Lucky, Bodie Express, probably War Story too, will all be trying to make their way to the Pegasus World Cup at the end of January. We're going to be there too. We'll be there to bring you that coverage exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, so make sure you join us for the Pegasus World Cup and all of our coverage in 2019. But Ron Nicoletti will be with me in the second half of the show to preview the graded stakes action at Gulfstream today. There are 5 stakes races. 4 of them are graded. We'll try to get to all 5, but at least we'll bring you analysis of the 4 graded stakes. Ronnie's so, so good in not just his handicapping, but the way he tells the story and his knowledge of racing down there at Gulfstream Park. He's been in South Florida for a very long time, so I'm looking forward to that visit coming up in the second half of the show. That'll be right around 9:20 Eastern or a couple of minutes after. Our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. Not going to let the cat out of the bag on that one just yet, but stay tuned for that interview Should be a lot of fun at 9:40 Eastern time. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, going to be joined by Charles C. Canty. She and Billy Reed, both inducted into the National Museum of Racing's Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor. That's a big deal. I mean, and you think about the people that do this for a living on the media side of things. Billy Reed, Charles C. Canty, as deserving as anybody. Great choices for this year's Media Roll of Honor. Going to talk to Charles C. coming up in just a minute. Hour number two, straight ahead, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One wheel. Looked impossible.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
On the inside, on the cottage board, on the outside, solo the Manor, and here he is, the incomparable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar.
And here it is, the 37-year wait is over. American Furrow is finally the one. American Furrow has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. Happy to have you back with me for the second half of the program, and it is going to be a busy second half of the show, final hour of the program. Before we get to that, though, want to let you know that if you missed any portion of the first half, just head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net, and you can also access our podcasts by going to Apple Podcasts. Horse Racing Radio Network is the way to access those archive shows at Apple. My interview with Byron King in the first half of the show, talking about the Symposium on Racing, and Mike D'Anzaris from Embrace the Race, all part of a busy first half of the program, and looking forward to hour number two. Poll question today asked listeners to let us know, this is pretty simple, where are you listening to the show? Where are you listening from this morning? Anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. And want to welcome Kent in Fairfax, Virginia, Eric in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and somebody who just goes by Road Warrior in Staten Island, New York, all tweeting to us. So many of you have emailed the show, too, mike@horseracingradio.net, to let us know where you're listening. We'll continue to pass those along throughout the second half of the show. Well, I told you that Charles C. Canty joined Billy Reed in being inducted into the National Museum of Racing's Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor this year, and I can't think of two more deserving individuals to receive that honor, and pleased to welcome Charles C. Canty to the program now. Charles C., welcome to the Horse Racing Radio Network. Appreciate the time this morning.
Absolutely, Mike. Glad to be with you. Good morning.
Good morning. And let me get this out of the way right off the bat. Go Navy, beat Army. Is that right?
Well said, my man. Well said.
Terry Finley will never sponsor this show again, now that I did that, but
Terry and I have a good time going back and forth about that, but it's Navy's turn to beat Army this year. They've had 3 years in a row. It's time to give it back.
You know, I went to the game for the very first time in my life last year, froze my tail off, but it was such an incredible experience. It's one of those things that it's one of those bucket list things. If you're going to go to a sporting event, this is one of the ones you have to attend.
It truly is. It's like everyone must see the Derby once. There's an emotion and a feeling, and nobody loses that game. It is just really a powerful thing to do. And if you can go, but Lord, bring a stadium blanket because it's always so cold.
It certainly is. Well, Charles C., first of all, congratulations on this tremendous honor. Tell me about the moment when you got word that you were going to receive the Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor.
Oh, Mike, I was just stunned. I cannot put into words how floored I was when the call came in. And I'm still in disbelief that it is happening. And the first words, of course, anytime something wonderful happens to someone so momentous like this, as you say, you're honored and you're humbled, and indeed I am. But kind of after the shock wore off a little bit, I felt a tiny bit sheepish because there are just so many deserving people. I mean, you look around racing, and everybody who covers racing now, Randy Moss and Dave Johnson and Tom Durkin, and the scores of women who have become so solid and so brilliant at what they do for thoroughbred racing, Katen Brader, Donna Brothers, Brittany Yurton. I mean, it's just such a thrill for this recognition, but there are so many people who do such wonderful things in media.
You are credited, Charles C., as being the person who really came up with the concept of doing interviews on horseback, and we see Donna Brothers doing that now on the NBC television coverage. We see it on some other programs, too. It's become a thing. Do you look at yourself as being somewhat of a pioneer in that department?
Well, actually, I didn't come up with the idea.
Okay.
I did wind up being the first one to do it. It started back in the CBS days, back in the late 70s. And Bob Fishman, who was the producer of the show, and they had an outrider in New York who was actually Wesley Ward's uncle, Jim Daly, who they had started to mic him up, and he would collect the winner, and they were able to relay a question to the jockey. And sadly, he died very suddenly, not too long before the first Belmont telecast we were doing that year. And Bob turned around and looked at me, and he said, "Guess what you're going to do?" That's how it started. So all credit goes to Bob Fishman, who's still, of course, doing CBS Sports basketball, the Final Four and all that. I mean, he's a legend in his game. So that's how it started, and it went on for me for about 8 years, 8 or 9 years. And then when we switched from CBS over to ABC, and Kurt Gowdy Jr. decided, well, we're going to do it a little more. We're going to do a little something different. We're going to put a camera on your helmet. Now, Donna and everybody who does it on horseback now, they've got the wonderful little, tiny emitters and cameras. But in those days, it was a huge amount of equipment. It was heavy, and it was saddlebags and the whole thing. And we did it once at the Derby, which was 1986 it was. And so Snow Chief had been the favorite in that race, if I recall. And Shoemaker won the race on him, the Nijinsky colt, drawing a blank on his name. He wins. So we go to Pimlico, and we do the same thing again, although now it's a stranger's tacking up the pony, and I'm in the paddock on foot doing interviews, so I don't get to inspect or do anything. We run out, I jump on the pony, and the stuff is all equipped and all on him, and the wire is attached to this helmet that is latched to the saddle and the whole thing. And so the horses break out of the gate, and I have to gallop up to the end of the turn, and as I go from after the horses break, and I go to the turn, and my head starts getting pulled backwards, and everything starts slipping and sliding off. And I've managed to get the horse over to where the tunnel is there at Pimlico, get off the pony, and the valets in the paddock, they helped me get all that stuff collected. I mean, it all, the saddle slipped under the pony's belly. And
wow.
And I was able to leap off and hang on to him and the whole thing. It was one of these train wrecks. So I picked the whole scoop of stuff up, and I can hear Jim McKay saying, "Okay, and Snow Chief is the winner. We'll go down to Charlesy." And by this time, I'm almost through the paddock and out the back of the grandstand to the TV truck, where I pile the stuff on the steps. And I said to Kurt Gowdy, I said, "No more horseback interviews for me, ever." So that was a short-lived section, but it did start something. And it's obviously today it goes so beautifully and smoothly, and it's really terrific.
You know, Charles, you mentioned a name like Kurt Gowdy, and when you think about the people you had the privilege to work with, the names like Frank Wright and Dave Johnson and Jim McKay, Al Michaels, Jack Whitaker, just the fact that you were able to be around those notable individuals had to be pretty special for you, I would imagine.
Absolutely was. I mean, to work with Jack Whitaker and Jim McKay, who just... poetry just flowed off their tongues without any effort. And, of course, Tom Hammond was my rock.
Yeah.
He was fabulous. But I have to give so much credit to Dave Johnson, because we started way back in 75 with the Racing from Aqueduct Belmont Saratoga local show out of Naira there. And I had never had any television experience. I knew nothing. And Dave and the late Frank Wright, the two of them, shepherded me. And I really didn't look to be on television. And I was very nervous, really nervous about it. And it was kind of an ordeal I got through every week, although I loved being able to be up close and personal with all the good horses and riders. But I kept saying, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do this anymore. Dave and Frank would close ranks around me and say, you're going to keep doing this. And then it got better and better. But to them, I have to give so much credit, the two of them.
Yeah, talking with Charles C. Canty here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Charles C., I've talked to so many people over the years on this program that have received tremendous honors like this, and oftentimes they'll tell me that it's a time for reflection, and they think back on their career and some of the moments that stand out to them. So when you do look back on your career and everything you were able to accomplish, whether it be in the early days when you were working for Hall of Fame trainers or afterwards when you got into the broadcasting side of things, what are some of the moments that stand out to Charles C. Canty?
Well, so many. I don't even know where to begin. First things first, what I was doing, I had discovered working on the backstretch, and I just couldn't believe my luck that I was doing something that I would have done for free, but it was my job, and I was so happy back there. I loved the backstretch. I loved galloping horses. I loved being on the track. I loved every minute. That is still my fondest, warmest memory. Of working mostly in New York, mostly up at Belmont, and during the Golden Decade. I mean, here's a moment for you. You're walking up the horse path at Belmont Park, which anybody who's been there and seen it is absolutely spectacular. And I would walk the length of the horse path on one of Whiteley's horses, who they like form to stop and stand and look around, even on the horse path. And you'd just be standing there while they were kind of looking around, and here comes Secretariat. Oh, a few years later, there goes Affirmed. Then here's Seattle Slew. I mean, you're literally brushing stirrup irons with the greatest horses who ever lived, and watch them and see them every single day. So on the backside, that would be the most wonderful and glorious part of it. On the front side, on the telecast, I have a terrible habit of only remembering the faux pas and the bloopers, and I can't. But being right in the middle of all that, and being with McKay at the Derby, and being with Tom Hammond at the Derby, I mean, that's always such an emotional feeling when, you know, it's in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and here we are at Louisville for in Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby. And people will say to me to this day, well, that maybe don't know me or anything, they say, well, have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby? And I all I can do is to keep from kind of laughing, because you don't want to tell them you've been 21 times.
Yeah.
It was always a great thing to go to the Derby, but you know where I really loved the best was coming to Pimlico afterwards for the Preakness, because then it's distilled down into that nugget group who really, you've cut away everything else, and we're all right there in one barn, and that's where you're going to run into Bill Knack and Steve Haskin, and then in the day before they retired, Jenny Reese and Mary Jean Wall, who were pioneer women doing the coverage for the Kentucky papers there and writing books. And, you know, that kind of exposure to everything is part and parcel of the entire television experience.
You know, Charles C., I was reading that your first network television broadcast was with CBS, and it was the 1977 Travers Stakes. And I grew up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, which is about a little over an hour from Saratoga.
Oh, yeah, close by.
Yeah, so the Travers was very special to me as a kid growing up and just getting involved in the sport. What do you remember about that day and that first broadcast?
Well, I happen to remember it well because there was a disqualification involved. And I guess because I really didn't know any better, I just kind of jumped right in and said, well, this one's coming down, which you really shouldn't say. I wish I had some of the footage from the old days. I don't really have much of any footage at all, but it would be fun to go back and look at that.
Yeah, what was
that? I remember that well. It was Jatsky wound up the winner.
Yeah, that's right. Jatsky was put up via the disqualification that day. What a way to break into the network television broadcasting side of things, huh?
Well, it's true, and you know, another funny memory was the first show I ever did, and the reason I did it was because Frank Wright had to go do some kind of a race on the West Coast, and Dave Johnson needed somebody, and so somehow I got tapped to do that. And poor Dave, here he is. He said, hold the microphone in this hand. Look at that glass thing on the camera. I mean, that's how basic it was. And that race that day on a Saturday was the Vosburgh. It was a sprint. And a horse who had won, who had run Friday afternoon, in those days we had 24-hour entries, he had run on Friday afternoon. His name was No Bias. I can remember that.
Wow.
And he won on Friday afternoon an allowance race, and he wheeled right back and ran in the Vosburgh and won it. So there, the script was written that day, so that became pretty easy. And that was a pretty amazing experience for the very first time on camera.
You know, not only did you have the chance to be around some pretty special horses when you were doing the broadcast, but you did when you were working with some of the top trainers in the game, and even your husband, Joe, who, you know, had a chance to condition horses like Grade One winner Cox's Ridge and Temperance Hill, who won the Travers, the Belmont, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and then Majesty's Prince came along later on, too. What was it like to you know, be around those horses and to see your husband have so much success?
Well, it was just, you know, that's a hard one to put into terms, because there's the stress and the pressure. You worry about the horses, you worry about the help, you worry about keeping the barn going smooth, and then you lead them over there, and when they run like that, it's the highest high in the world, and when it doesn't go well, it's the lowest low in the world, and then you go home. And as he famously told me on TV one day after Cox's Ridge won a race there at Aqueduct, and I interviewed him. It was really weird interviewing your own husband, really weird. So I said, well, he did this, and he did that, and the race set up, and we were talking, and he says, yep, he ran good. He said, but you still got to go home and cook dinner. He says that to me right on the air. So that was back in the 70s, remember. But I guess the greatest one of those is the same story I trot out every time, but it was such an amazing day. And I thought about it when I saw Brittany's father saddle up a Breeders' Cup winner, and she covers the story. It was with Temperance Hill winning the Belmont in 1980. And my infamous gallop down the stretch, because I was expecting our son and I wasn't riding, and so I had to run the length of a grandstand because they had me up at the quarter pole. And when he went by me, obviously he was going for the lead and he was going to win it. And so I just dropped, completely unprofessional, ripped off all the equipment, everything, dropped it there, and took off running in there's a little well thing between the grandstand railing and the outside fence of the track. And I galloped down there, and all the people were all leaning over and hollering and, you know, and cheering, and because I was doing the show locally there, and everybody sort of knew me. And I got to managed to get back to the winner's circle just as they're leading Temperance Hill in, and I'm standing there just gasping for breath, absolutely gasping for breath. And Jack Whitaker and Frank Wright are up on the little raised podium there doing the show, and two sets of arms lift me up and plop me down on the platform, and they turn and they say, "My God, you won this! What did you think? How did you all know?" Because he paid like $108, and at that time he was about the third highest price winner ever. And of course, I look at both of them and I can't talk, so all I can do is go. It was just the most unprofessional performance, and it was just one of the most memorable days of my life.
She is Charles C. Canty here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Charles C., I know it's a very busy morning for you, so I won't keep you much longer, but give people a sense of what you're up to now, and are you still involved in the sport in any way? Do you follow it as closely as you used to? What's Charles C. doing now?
I do, Mike. I follow it maybe more broadly. I'm not studying as hard and keeping notebooks of information in preparation for weekend races and so on, but I certainly follow it very broadly. I'm still in touch with all my good friends. I'm on the board of the Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation, which does enormously important medical research for the safety and welfare of the horse. And anybody who's ever sat on a horse, whether it's a racehorse, a polo pony, a show pony, a pleasure horse, a walking horse, a fox hunter, somewhere along the way, Grayson has made that horse safer and more healthy for you. So do keep that in mind. And I will always love it and always care about it and always keep track of it. And I'm hoping that racing will turn around as a member of WOA, the Water, Hay, and Oats Alliance. I am hoping that we can get our central, strong clearing place in the middle here, and we get this new drug regulations and get everything. It's time for racing. It's a crossroads, and we got to go there. and I'm pleased to see the change in the situation with the whip. There's a public perception that racing needs to be aware of, because being outside the fence for this long and kind of drifting anonymously through people who don't know me or anything about it, and you'll hear comments, well, it's cruel, all those horses die. So it's time to really, really step up.
All right, Charles Lee, one final question before I let you go. Earlier we talked about some of the moments that stood out to you in this what is now a Hall of Fame career. How about the moment or the thing that you might be most proud of when you think back on everything you were able to accomplish throughout your life and throughout your career in racing?
Well, I'm needless to say, this is the most validating and proudest moment of my life. But when I think back to the very beginning, when I first came around, there were basically very few women on the racetrack. This was the late 60s. And there were so few women. It was a male bastion, and of course it would have been, given the time frame. But as I spent some time working on the track, and about 6 or 7 years later, I started doing that Racing From program for NYRA. And more women started drifting in the early 80s, and there was much more. The percentage of women on the backstretch really climbed. And I had more gals come to me and say, if my parents hadn't seen you on TV, they wouldn't, up until that point, they would not let me even think about coming to work at the racetrack. But you opened that door for me, and thank you. And that's the thing that really, really pleases me deep down inside.
Yeah, well, on behalf of everybody who has, myself included, who has been part of this great sport on the media side of things, Charles, thank you as well for everything that you have done for this sport. And it's been a delight to watch you over the years. As I was getting into horse racing, you were always a central part of that coverage and always so classy and did everything the right way. So thank you so much, and congratulations on the National Museum of Racing Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor. Can't wait to see you up there on that stage when we get there pretty soon.
Well, thank you, and I'll look forward to meeting you, and I will always be grateful to Joe Hirsch and the Turf Riders and everyone who made this possible for me. He was a wonder. Thank you.
All right,
see
thanks.
You next summer.
Enjoy the Army-Navy game.
Will do. Beat Army.
Thanks, Charles C. Charles C. Canty here on HRN. What a delight, huh? What a delight. And just to hear her voice again, as I was growing up, watching racing on television, it was Tom Hammond and Charles C. Canty. Dave Johnson was there. I mentioned Al Michaels. People forget Al Michaels was a big part of those broadcasts. Yeah, Al Michaels, a big horse racing guy. Well, how good was she? Charles C. Canty, if you missed any portion of that interview, just head back to the website, horseracingradio.net, and check it out. Got a couple more emails in from people listening all over the country. Bobby in Peabody, Massachusetts, welcome to the program. And this is pretty cool. Reese and Snickers, my two dogs, and myself, Chris, listening in Louisville. They listen every week. So Reese and Snickers, happy to have you along for the ride. Chris, you too. But always nice to have a couple of the pups listening too. Going to go ahead and get to another break. Come back with Ron Nicoletti live from Gulfstream to handicap the big races down there. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Atiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Deep in the heart of horse country, from these Kentucky hills has sprung a legacy rivaled by few. From the all-time greats of yesterday to the breed-shaping bloodlines of today, our roots hold strong with the promise of tomorrow. For over a century, our passion has guided us to where we stand and everything we stand for. Claiborne Farm, the tradition continues.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
But it's Little Mike who's going to try to take him all the way. Little Mike turns for home in front by 2. Get Stormy. On the outside comes Blue Street. Oh, Battle of Hastings got caught in traffic. Little Mike to catch. Blue Street is coming on the outside. Here comes Blue Streak. Little Mike at the rail. Blue Street to the outside. These two to the wire. Blue Street or Little Mike. Nose is a part of the finish. Smart Bid was 3rd, and it's close for 4th.
Larry Colmus with the call. Little Mike winning the 2011 renewal of the Fort Lauderdale at Gulfstream. Of course, he would go on the following year to win the Breeders' Cup Turf. So a race that has produced some pretty darn good runners. No doubt. And looking forward to talking with Ron Nicoletti coming up in just a few minutes. Live from Gulfstream Park. He'll handicap some of the big races, at least the greatest stakes. We'll touch on those, including the Fort Lauderdale and the Harlan's Holiday, all of those big races down in South Florida today. And look, you have horses that are trying to get to the Pegasus World Cup, not just the Pegasus World Cup dirt race, but you have the Pegasus World Cup turf. Both of those races looking... Well, you'll see horses on the docket today that are pointing for those races, no doubt about it. Ronnie is awaiting our call down there in Florida. We'll try to get him on the line now. Don't forget, let me know where you're listening today. That is our poll question. We have had people chiming in from all over the United States and really happy to have you on board for the Equine Forum this morning. Mark is listening right here in Lexington, Kentucky, and Scott with a tweet to us listening in Thompson, Connecticut, saying how much he loves New York racing. So thanks for being aboard. Happy to have you guys with us here this morning. Our industry star of the week comes up after Ron Nicoletti. You'll want to make sure you're tuned in for that. Should be right around 9:40 Eastern time, maybe a couple of minutes after. Looking forward to that as well. No, Ron? I'll make sure I gave you the right phone number for him. That's been known to happen here before. All right, we are efforting Ron Nicoletti for you here on the program. And hopefully get a chance to talk to him about these big races. Yeah, that sounds like Ron Nicoletti now. We'll get a chance to talk to him. All right, so horseracingradio.net is your home for all of our podcasts. And Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts as well. Another place to do it. Ronnie is indeed with us now here on HRN. Ronnie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good, pal. How's things in South Florida?
Good. The weather's pretty nice. Looks like it's going to be a great day. We're fast and firm. You always love that. We got a $600,000 guarantee in the Rainbow Six Kids just to spice things up. So things are good.
Yeah, and lots of great racing. I mentioned earlier in the program, I was talking about the 5 stakes races, 4 of them being graded. And I kind of called it, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, but I called it a Pegasus World Cup preview type of card. Is that right?
Yeah, that's basically what it is, because, you know, horses, you know, like Brody Express, they're sort of looking if they, you know, if they can run well here. Brody Express is thinking of going to the Pegasus. So it's actually a prep day for them. So these races, of course, come up. They're really tough and really exciting to handicap with speed, closes, starkers. So makes it for a fun day. But a lot of questions will be answered today.
Yeah, and that big carryover always helps, too, you know, trying to take down the rain. You know, before we dive into these races, Ronnie, what's your usual approach when you're putting together a ticket on a day like this for the Rainbow Six?
Well, you know, depending how deep your pocket is basically what it is. So what I try and do is try and find that single, you know, somewhere in the race where you can go deeper in other races if you get, like, the last race. You know, 16 to 2 lifetime claimer on the grass, so you want to go deep there, you know. And like I say, when the guarantee is up to $600,000, I'll put an A ticket together, B ticket. So the horse that I singled, I might go too deep in there and, you know, take a couple of other horses out of races I wasn't totally sure of. And, you know, as much as you want to put in, is the chance you got it. But the beauty of this is, even, you know, it's almost impossible for a guy like me, the mile that I bet, to get that one unique single ticket. But you could get $6,000, you know, Ben, $57. These things come back great to 6 out of 6 if you don't get the $1 million ticket. So to me, it's a great bet.
Yeah, it is a great bet, and it's an opportunity to, if you don't have a big budget, to maybe try to make a score for just a little bit of money. So it's really cool. Let's start with race number 6. That's the first of the stakes races. 6 furlongs on the main track. It's the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl. How'd you see that one, Ronnie?
I went with a bit of both. The number 3 is going for a third consecutive victory at the distance, her 7th score of the year. She's just been incredible. She shipped up to Ocala. She won the OBS sprint on that, you know, synthetic surface they have up there. Of course, it's Jason Service, Paco Lopez going for the hat trick. But you have Ladies Island, and you saw it at Ladies Island run up in up in Saratoga. Just blew the doors off the competition. So it looks like they're the two speeds. I'm going to speed, which makes me think that I got to give a second look to Stormy Embraces back in the barn of you know, back in the South Florida. So I just thought that this one would run well for you know, Stanley Gold is back in his barn, has been working well, and that one's going to come from off the pace.
All right,
Kathleen O'Connell's barn, excuse me.
Yeah. The race following that is the My Charmer, not a graded stakes, but I know you've taken a look at it, so I don't mind asking you about it. 1 mile on the turf. You mentioned the weather's gorgeous, so it should be fast, and the turf course should be firm, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's confirmed today. And the My Charmer, the only one that is graded, to me, is the best race on the card, the most intriguing race on the card. This was Grade 3 last year, and it was sort of shocked. We would just say, oh, 5 graded stakes, and then we'd realize that it was only 4 of the 5. Because, you know, you have Mitchell Rode in there from Bill Mott, who's getting that class leap, if you want to say, today, you know, flattening out, finishing 8 behind the next out Breeders' Cup winner, Uni, that was in that First Lady at Keeneland. I mean, Bill Mott's horse looks like the one to beat in there, Mitchell Rode. And you got Althea going back into stakes competition. And Munchkin Money, who's been good, he beat those New York State bread runners. So I like that race. I really like Mitchell Rode. That's the one I'm thinking of maybe singling in the Rainbow Six.
Yeah, you know, days like this with the championship meet, if you don't get excited over these races and these types of horses being there, you're probably not a racing fan, because this is a tremendous day in South Florida at Gulfstream Park. The Grade 3 Rampart will follow that one, 1 mile on the main track, and another pretty solid field in here, Ronnie.
Yeah, this one was a little tough. I went actually with an 8-to-1 shot on top, and that's Pink Sand. They're stretching out to the mile. Run well at the mile. 4 races, a win, a couple of seconds, and a third. Rally late to finish third. That was in that $100,000, I think it was Pumpkin Pie at Aqueduct. That race came out great, produced a trio of next out winners. And this one of those horses in that race came back and was second, I believe, in the Grade 3 go for one. More importantly, I see this horse sitting the trip behind the speed. Of course, trained by, you know, Chuck McGay. You can't go wrong with that with Jose Ortiz. So a little bit of a price for me. The story in the race is Cookie Dough. This is the one I got confused with. This is the one going back to the Stanley Gold Bond. And it's just interesting. He's been this horse has been raced, you know, trained great. This one's the story of the race, but I'm going to go with Pink Sands, and I used tweeting on there too, but I think Pink Sands is where I can get that little bit of a price.
Yeah, I told you he's the best. He has his finger on the pulse of all these horses down there in South Florida. He is Ron Nicoletti, live from Gulfstream Park here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. Ronnie, that brings us to the Fort Lauderdale, and this is a race that has produced some unbelievable horses. Earlier, I played the call of Little Mike winning this race in 2011, the year before he won the Breeders' Cup Turf. You had Silver Medallion win this race. You had M. Shuish. Last year it was Shining Copper under Jose Ortiz from Mike Maker, who won this race. So there have been some really good horses to come out of the Fort Lauderdale.
I've been here since the beginning of time, and one of the races I love each year is the Fort Lauderdale for all the reasons you mentioned. This is the grade two on the card, and I just think it's another great race. I went with Admission Office, who's debuted locally, rallied to it, goes third, beat the half length. That was in that River City handicap at Churchill, son of Point of Entry, trained by Brian Lynch. He's another one. Gets the pace that I think is going to be good. If you watch the Gulfstream races this year, I got my head handed to me in the first couple of days because, you know, traditionally, though, speed at Gulfstream is very easy. Find the speed, you win. The racetrack has not been playing that way on the main track, and even on the turf, it's not, you know, only closes, but it's been sort of fair. So I didn't get that speed thing that I usually get the first couple of weeks. So just keep that in mind when you're looking at these races. And I didn't know what to do with Channel Cat in that race. He's turned back to 9 furlongs. This one, you know, runs, but let's, you know, he's beaten by Bricks and Mortar, you know, in the 12-furlong Breeders' Cup Mile. I don't know if this one can get this short a distance today. I'm a little confused going 9 furlongs, even though this horse has a win at the distance.
Yeah, well, it should be interesting. That's the Fort Lauderdale. It will be followed by the final race, race number 10, which is not the final race on the program, but the final graded stakes of the afternoon, the Grade 3 Harlan's Holiday. Purse of $100,000, the three-year-olds and up going a mile and a 16th on the main track. Prince Lucky is going to be the 2-1 favorite for Todd Pletcher under John Velasquez, but all eyes might be on the horse that John Velasquez came off of at the beginning of the Preakness Stakes, Bodie Express, who is 2-for-2 since losing Johnny V at the start of the Preakness.
Well, I'm the biggest Bodie Express fan. I picked him at the Preakness, you know, work at the Preakness every year, and I was up there, and the horse was taking a little bit of money and dumped Johnny at the start. So I've sort of been in the horse's corner since that day. It's come back and run exceptionally well in it. I mean, Prince Lucky's the one to beat, but Bodie Express, I think, answers the question today. Is this horse, like we started at the top of the show here, is this horse good enough to be in, you know, the Pegasus? That's where you're going to get that answer today with Bodie Express.
Well, we're going to find out, and it should be a great day of racing in South Florida. We'll see if Bodie Express can get it done in that Harlan's Holiday and move on to the Pegasus World Cup. Ronnie, any updates on any of the horses that are pointing for that race in late January, or is it still a little early?
It's still a little early, actually. We're trying to find out yesterday. I think we might even get a list today of who might be pointing there. So, you know, Omaha Beach is the big name that we hear is going to come here, you know, and stay, come soon and then stay until, we, you know, the Pegasus. But well, we got to wait to see. So, and, of course, Bodie Express will be in there. And, you know, Maximum Security is pointing for that. So that's three that we sort of think are coming here. So.
Now, Ronnie, check your email, because like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift card from Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and we'll encourage people to wear what they love at EmbraceTheRace.com, and really appreciate you taking a little time here this morning. I know it's a busy day for you, so I'll let you go, but thanks for being here, my friend, and happy holidays.
Same to you and your wife, too. Tell hello to Michelle.
All right, I will, buddy. Take care of my girl Acacia down there.
She's right next to me right now. She just came in with a big mouth opened up. I can barely hear you. She's laughing. All right, guys.
I know that all too well. Thanks, Ronnie.
You do. Bye.
Ron Nicoletti here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, he one heck of a handicapper, so pay attention to the picks and the horses he talked about in that segment. And don't forget, if you missed it, head back to horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. Get to another break. Come back with your industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris in our next segment. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mohamed, undefeated 2-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tapping, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
Adina Springs Stallion, Ghost Sapper. The consistently brilliant sire of 11% black type winners, including Breeders' Cup champion and Eclipse champion female sprinter, Judy the Beauty.
Judy the Beauty! Judy the Beauty! One and a head and a thriller!
Santa Anita Handicap winner, Shaman Ghost.
Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
And Whitney Handicap hero, Moreno.
100 yards from home, and it's Moreno! Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score!
In 2019, Ghost Sapper is the sire of double-digit stakes winners for the 7th straight year, and his current stars include Del Mar Futurity winner Nucky and 3-year-old Philly sensation Guarana.
On to another impressive outing here. Guarana 2 for 2, and she's an Acorn winner.
Guarana has won the Coaching Club American Oaks over Point of Honor.
Consistently brilliant, Ghost Sapper, standing at Adina Springs. Visit adinastallions.com.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Exaggerator has made a bold move. He's all the way up to take second now, in between horses, coming after Dancing Candy. Just behind them comes More Spirit with 5 to make up, then I Will Score and Smoky Image. Dancing Candy turns for home, and he's trying to fend off Exaggerator, who's 2 lengths behind second. More Spirit is fully extended. Dancing Candy's the real deal. He's in front by 2 lengths, coming to the 16th pole, and he takes a major step forward this afternoon. Dancing Candy, wire to wire in the San Felipe Stakes, and there's plenty left in the tank. More Spirit closed well for second, Exaggerator third, Uncle Lino was fourth.
That's Frank Miramati with the call of the 2016 running of the San Felipe, and Dancing Candy getting the victory that afternoon, defeating some pretty darn good horses, including More Spirit and Exaggerator. We'll tell you how that ties into our next segment, the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, in just a moment. But want to welcome Judy to the broadcast. She's tuned in Florence, New Jersey, listening from her backyard. We asked you as our poll question this morning, I asked to just let me know where you're listening, anywhere in the world, anywhere in the country. You still have time to do that. About 15 minutes left in the show. So tweet to us at HRN. Let me know where you're tuned in this morning, or send an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can hit me up that way and email the show and let me know where you're tuned in to the Equine Forum on this Saturday morning. Well, I mentioned this next segment, your Industry Star of the Week. It's a weekly segment presented by our friend Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales coming up around the country. Well, it's a pleasure now to welcome this week's Industry Star of the Week, who is Adrian Gonzalez, the owner of Checkmate Thoroughbreds in California, doing a great job. And I play that clip of Dancing Candy winning the San Felipe because Dancing Candy, one of the horses that Checkmate Thoroughbreds and Adrian manage in California, and he has done a great job in the face of adversity in the Golden State at bringing stallions to the state. That is not something that is easy to do, and he has done it and done it very well. And he is with me now as our Industry Star of the Week. Adrian, good morning and congratulations.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for getting up early out there on the West Coast and looking forward to hearing your story. You've been at this now for what, about 3 decades and continuing just to plug along and to keep things moving in the right direction.
Yeah, just grinding. You know, before the call here, I was scrolling through Twitter, and it was a really neat thing I saw. It was a video clip from 1995 of Bill Gates trying to explain the internet to David Letterman, and they were, like, laughing him off the stage, like what a dumb thing. And I was just kind of thinking, like, wow, over time, like, what are we talking about now that someday is going to be, you know, something brand new or some really, really bonehead idea we had?
Yeah, well, all right.
It's been a while.
Let's start there. Talk about some of these ideas that you've been able to come up with and some of the initiatives that you're part of now out there in California.
So, as you mentioned, we brought some stallions here to California. And I think it's not just the stallions that we've brought, but the way that we've structured these deals and putting them together. So it's not just a group of us with some money to buy a stallion to stand them. It's actually both Danzig Candy and a new horse we just brought, Sir Prancelot. We put them into 50-share syndicates, and there's, you know, 50 separate entities purchasing a share in these horses. And when you kind of hear the bad news happening in California and stuff, it sounds like everybody's running for the hills. But that may be true on some fronts. But on the breeding end, we have some very, very supportive breeders that are really doubling down on the breeding industry and buying in on the long term of breeding here in California in the ownership of these stallions. And we kind of saw over years of, you know, there was some really nice mares people owned that they're based here in California, but they're breeding the mares in Kentucky. And in order to make their foals cowbred, they needed to breed those mares back to something here in California. And the complaint constantly was, well, I'm devaluing my mares, breeding them down to the stallions that are here. And that's what really kind of sparked it, was like, well, instead of paying money to a stallion owner to breed to a stallion we don't really like, why don't we just go buy something that we would like to support and use our nice mares on? And that's kind of what spawned the whole thing. And it's really become a huge group effort, and it's really taken off well. We started with Danzig Candy a couple years ago. He ended up breeding more mares in the state than any other stallion, and that rolled right into a new horse we just did with Sir Prancelot. And he was kind of an obscure pedigreed horse and ran abroad, and we thought we might have a tough time syndicating him, and he sold out in 2 days. So it was really remarkable.
Why did you think he would be a good fit in California?
Well, every time we would watch these graded stakes on the turf out here, there was a Sir Prancelot running in them and running well, and you just couldn't ignore it anymore. It was one of those things of, like, where are these horses coming from? We have some clients that board some horses at our farm and partner with us on some pinhook stuff that had been importing these Sir Prancelot from the European sales, and you know, it was like, it was just an obvious thing. Like, people are flying these horses in from all over the world to run here, and maybe that's the type of stallion we need to go after. So obviously he wasn't our next door neighbor. He was coming all the way from Australia. So it was a little bit more difficult deal to work through, but it just made sense for everybody. And we really tried very hard to make it happen. And got some luck there, and we've got him coming. He should be here in about 3 weeks, so we're excited to see him.
Yeah, you should be. Sir Prancelot and Dancing Candy both standing at Rancho San Miguel in San Miguel, California. Why was that the right farm, Adrian?
Well, we started with Dancing Candy there, and they were the farm manager at the time, Clay Murdoch, was very accommodating to this new structure type of deal. You know, people breeding mares on share seasons was kind of a new thing out here. I don't know that there's been really any other stallions that were syndicated. So most of the farms were kind of looking for the board rate and, you know, the stud fee revenue. But Clay was really open to what we were trying to do and worked with us. And we had some growing pains. None of us really knew exactly how to structure it until we kind of got going, and it worked great. Like I said, Danza Candy, his first season, bred more mares in California than any other stallion, and we really didn't know our advertising budget, what it should be, and we really overshot our mark with the mares that we brought in. So it was a no-brainer to do another stallion there. We already kind of had the infrastructure in place of, you know, the network and everything. So it just made the most sense. And unfortunately, about a month after we got the Sir Prancelot deal done, Clay Murdoch passed away. So, you know, we've kind of had a little rough going there in the meantime, but the farm crew, everybody's still in place. So we're trudging along here, unfortunately without Clay, but we're going to do the best we can.
Yeah. Well, next time you get into a situation where you're trying to figure out those advertising budgets, we'll talk privately. I can help you out with that.
I appreciate that.
Adrian Gonzalez, our industry star of the week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Adrian, it sounds to me, and even when I called you yesterday to ask you to join me here on the program, you're a very positive guy, and you're very bullish on the industry, the breeding industry in California. What things do you see in the face of all the adversity and the negativity that's taking place in California and has taken place this year? What things do you see that allow you to be positive and bullish on that side of the business in California?
I would have to say the number one thing is our partners. Like I said, I couldn't do this. You know, we don't have a big wealth of money buried in the backyard that we could just, as a hobby, buy stallions with. It takes a whole big group of partners to do this. And to be honest, their enthusiasm motivates me. So if I had to really be out there dialing for dollars, like, that's not my thing. It's not one of my strengths. So I can't really, you know, hustle that type of business. It's more like they really push me to find something, and then that motivates me. And so really I'd have to put it to our partners and our breeders. And like I said, breeding the most mares of any stallion in California, like, when that's my motivation is the success we've had, knowing we took a huge risk at the time. I think when we bought Danza Candy, Spendthrift was in the process of buying him, and we overshot them, you know, and it was kind of like, we're taking some huge risks here. And obviously there's a lot of bad news coming out of California, but like you said, going back a few decades of me starting out here, since my first day on a job on a farm here in California, it's been bad news. It's constantly been contracting, but, you know, we've made a good career out of this, and we're still trudging forward, and we have some really good successes at the sales, and we've produced some good runners. You know, so the motivation is there based off of the success we've had. It kind of keeps us enthused. We recently had a filly named Spice Perfection that she came out of our two-year-old in training sale program, and she's looking at her second Cowbred Horse of the Year title now. And so that kind of stuff is really what keeps us trudging along.
Yeah, it's always kind of been that the sky is falling, Chicken Little, but it ain't fallen yet. And Adrian Gonzalez is a big reason why, and he continues to trudge along out there in California doing a phenomenal job with Checkmate Thoroughbreds. You can go to CheckmateTbreads.com to learn more about his work and the stallions and everything that he is doing. And that is why he is our Industry Star of the Week, this segment presented by Stuart Morris. And Adrian, like all of our guests, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and we'll get that out to you. But really appreciate you taking a little time here this morning. Thanks for getting up early with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks, Stuart Morris.
Yeah, keep up the good work, my friend. All right, Adrian Gonzalez here on HRRN. Yeah, really doing just a fantastic job out there, and in the face of a lot of negativity, remains positive. And you can hear why. Things aren't always as bad as they appear on the surface, and certainly that's not the case on a lot of levels there in California because of people like Adrian. Craig is tuned in Lexington, Kentucky, over at Gainesway Farm, learning pretty well from our friend Michael Hernan, obviously, because he then goes on to say, home to Tappet and Caracanti. Yeah, boy. Always have to get that in when we talk about Gainesway, and rightfully so, those two horses doing a phenomenal job. So, Craig, welcome to the program. Again, get to one final break. I'll come back and wrap it up for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere, or visit centralequipment.com.
The championship meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park. Come and enjoy the heart-pounding excitement of live thoroughbred horse racing, showcasing some of the best jockeys and horses in the world, all while experiencing the best in VIP hospitality in South Florida. Make sure to book your experience for the Pegasus World Cup 2020 on Saturday, January 25th, blending entertainment, innovation, and thoroughbred horse racing like no other event of its kind. For more information on the championship meet or Pegasus World Cup, visit GulfstreamPark.com. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainesway stallion Caraconti, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4/5, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and has already sired three first crop stakes winners and two additional stakes place two-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior, the Group 3 winner, remains undefeated in three starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainesway.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Well, remember that Blood Horse is the industry's only weekly magazine and tablet. It has been covering thoroughbred racing and breeding for more than 100 years. If you want to follow the sport, the industry, then there is absolutely no better way than Blood Horse Magazine. Here's a special offer for you. You can save 70% off the cover price, plus get a 2020 Blood Horse wall calendar, which is valued at $24.95. You'll get that free by going to bloodhorse.com/winter special. That's bloodhorse.com/winter special. I want to say hello to Joe, who is tuned into the program in Montreal, Canada. Welcome to the program, Joe. Happy to have you along. Just about done with this one, though. I'm going to be back with Red Brand Radio coming up on Wednesday and a brand new trainer talk here on the network, so make sure you're locked in there. That all begins 3 o'clock Eastern, and you can visit horseracingradio.net for more information. Follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Thanks to everybody who weighed in on where they were listening today all over the country and for tuning into the program. My thanks to Byron King, Mike Dianzaris, Charles C. Canty, Ron Nicoletti, and Adrian Gonzalez for joining me on the show this morning. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. As always, let's do this. Go Steelers!